Are you truly committed to feeling better? I mean, absolutely feeling your best. What's the key? Eat well, sleep well, lots of hydration through water, and also your daily innovative wellness athletic supplement packs. These packets are created to supplement your daily lifestyle, allowing your body to have the nutrients it needs to run efficiently. These packets include multi-omega fish oil, D3K2 5000, probiotic, and magnesium. It's nearly impossible to get all the nutrients our body requires to run efficiently on a regular basis from our food alone. Taking this daily packet will leave you feeling more energetic and more vibrant. Your brain body will be able to detoxify more efficiently, which naturally reduces inflammation. Find out today, innovativewellness.center, innovativewellness.center, and use the code SPORTS Overnight America.
Welcome to Behind the Sport, the show where we go beyond the box score. This isn't your average sports recap. We're talking real stories, raw moments, and stuff nobody else is covering. From exclusive interviews to behind-the-scenes vibes, this is where the sports gets personal. I'm your host, Giovanna Scroggins, coming to you live on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. And yep, we're proudly powered by Innovatus Wellness Center. Let's get into it. We are going to talk to some interesting people today on the show, but I want to start with this question. What do Formula One and the Negro League Baseball have in common? Well, a lot more than you think. First up, we're talking to Michael Sawyer, author of the new Lewis Hamilton biography. We're talking fast cars, big barriers, and what it takes to make history. And, you know, he's the only black driver in the sport with just 20 seats. Then we're going to shift gears into some baseball, sitting down with Gerald Early. He's going to join us to break down the untold stories of the black baseball, his new book, Play Harder, dives into forgotten legends, the real impact of Jackie Robinson, and how that game shaped America. Before we dive into more of the episode, I want to start with talking about some NBA playoff action. It's been a wild ride so far on the NBA slate. And it's interesting because Nico and I talked about on the last episode, episode 5, Giannis needing to leave the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are now eliminated from playoff action. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what Giannis does over the offseason. I know there's some rumors swirling around about possible joining the Lakers. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but we'll see what he decides to do, whether he's going to stay in Milwaukee or go anywhere else. Of course, the Pacers now move on. They will face off against the Cavaliers. That series is going to be very interesting, so we'll see how that fares. One series I'm looking really, really under a microscope at is the Lakers and the Timberwolves. And then obviously on the other side, you have the Warriors and the Rockets. The Timberwolves currently lead that series 3-1. Warriors lead that series 3-1. My perfect world would be the Timberwolves going against the Warriors, but we'll have to see what happens. All right, stay tuned. We are going to talk to Michael Sawyer up next on Behind the Sport, presented by Innovative Wellness Center.
Fellow Americans, let the message ring out that from this day forward, when you buy American, you buy the best. Handcrafted, something premium, something pure. For this is the very essence of what our servicemen and women gave their lives to protect, and by God, we shall not allow their sacrifice to be forgotten. It's time to show the world just how great American can be. And we will not wait for tomorrow to come. We will stand here, this moment, together, and we will start today. Don't ever forget how great it is to be American.
America we need right now. America, premium vodka. Celebrate responsibly.
All aboard!
There's a new way to travel, and it's one of the oldest forms of transportation. Travel by train.
Yes, consider traveling around the United States on Amtrak. Traveling by train is a lot less of a headache than taking a plane. And you'd be surprised how many places you can go on an Amtrak. And there's no passports or IDs needed. Find out how to get where you're going as soon as tomorrow by train. Call the Amtrak Travel Hotline right now. We'll book your trip and email your tickets within minutes. Skip the drive to the airport and skip the lines. Call right now to book your Amtrak reservations. We service most of the United States.
All aboard!
Do something new. Travel by Amtrak today.
800-262-3903. 800-262-3903. 800-262-3903. That's 800-262-3903.
Are you truly committed to feeling better? I mean, absolutely feeling your best. What's the key? Eat well, sleep well, lots of hydration through water, and also your daily innovative wellness athletic supplement packs. These packets are created to supplement your daily lifestyle, allowing your body to have the nutrients it needs to run efficiently. These packets include multi-omega fish oil, D3K2 5000, probiotic, and magnesium. It's nearly impossible to get all the nutrients our body requires to run efficiently on a regular basis from our food alone. Taking this daily packet will leave you feeling more energetic and more vibrant. Your brain body will be able to detoxify more efficiently, which naturally reduces inflammation. Find out today, innovativewellness.center, innovativewellness.center, and use the code SPORTS Overnight America.
Welcome back to Behind the Sport on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, presented by Innovative Wellness Center. I'm very excited to sit down with our next guest, Michael Sawyer. He is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh and just wrote a new definitive biography about Lewis Hamilton titled Sir Lewis. Michael, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course, I'm excited to dive into probably one of the most remarkable stories, not only in F1, but in modern day sports, and kind of joining in Hamilton's, his rise, his impact, and the legacy on Formula One as a sport. And Hamilton, he didn't grow up with wealth or privilege. You know, his path to the motorsport industry, which is notoriously expensive, was anything but easy. I want to start with that aspect of the sport specifically. Getting into this motorsport, there's a lot of financial barriers around being in the entry level of racing, costing tens of thousands of dollars per year. What does this say about the financial barriers in the motorsport industry, and has anything changed since then?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, first, what you were saying about it being a huge story both inside and outside of motorsport generally. But yeah, F1 is notoriously expensive because, you know, you have to accumulate a sufficient number of points on your super license to earn a super license to make it to even propose to be able to drive an F1. That takes years of competing first in karting where, you know, generally kids, like mostly teenagers, some a little younger, started learning the rudiments of just driving, right? Because we know go-karts are low to the ground, they're exposed. So all the kinds of things you need to know about braking, you know, lines of travel, et cetera, picking the proper racing line, they learn close up, but that costs a lot of money, right? An average kart for that is probably somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000. Then it doesn't count for tires, fuel, travel, et cetera, to kind of basically campaign the car all over Europe generally in order to get some attention from a team that then will elevate a young driver up to open wheel where they're actually driving in an actual race car, right? And that's a prohibitively expensive venture, even above the go-kart situation. So that generally happens when you get attention from one of the developmental teams. So that only comes after having spent, like you're saying, tens of thousands of dollars a year just getting a kid where people can be in a position to pay attention to them. And to your point, not much has changed about that, right? I think this is one of Lewis's big concerns. He's been calling Formula One just a billionaire's boys club in recent years to just point out that, you know, the kind of struggle he and his family had in getting him to Formula One and how everything had to line up to make it possible.
with the Billionaires Boys Club. I mean, that statement alone really speaks to the essence of how this sport runs, and not only from the financial side of it, but from a race side of things. Hamilton becomes the first black driver in Formula One. Why do you think it took so long for this to happen? And not only this sport is, you know, gaining popularity in the U.S., but this is an international global sport. So for you to have underrepresentation for black athletes or other minority athletes that be represented in this sport, why do you think it took so long for this to happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, Formula One is not, in a lot of ways, not significantly different than motorsport here in this country, right, where you have had, you know, really severe underrepresentation as well, because the kind of things that kids, particularly who are from disadvantaged backgrounds, have around them, high school sports, you know, et cetera, to kind of make their way through a system, don't exist for Formula One, right? There's no, or racing generally, there's no high school racing where your kind of high school has a team, you kind of try out and get on it, where it's subsidized by either, you know, tuition or whatever, or being in a public school. So I think that's kind of the most obvious reason why it hasn't happened. The others are just, you know, the kind of larger context of what it means with class and race around these countries, right? I mean, you know, Lewis is part of a family whose dad's grandfather had migrated to Great Britain during the Windrush period after World War II to go there and be a worker. So these were not, you know, well-heeled or wealthy people. So all those barriers are kind of intact. And Lewis has been really adamant about attacking them. And his dad was, you know, becomes, and his family generally, right, a lot of times his dad becomes a point of focus. Both his mother and stepmother were always supportive of his project and doing whatever was necessary to keep him in the sport, even at great sacrifice, taking multiple jobs until the point where McLaren came and put him in the young drivers program.
Right, which brings me to the book specifically that you wrote. Fittingly, he did dedicate his book to his parents, and you've talked about in other interviews kind of the parallels of parenthood and the sacrifices with Hamilton's father and his mother. But outside of that, what new layers does this book add to what we already know about Lewis?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it was a complicated book to write because, you know, there's one way to, first off, it's difficult to write a biography about somebody who's alive, right? He's young. He's doing something new every day. So there's layers of that. So one thing that I had to do was figure out how to bracket the story, and it kind of worked out just in the way the world works, where his move to Ferrari was almost coincident with the time I had to hand in the book. So I kind of catch the entire kind of Mercedes era for him. And I think what I really wanted to accomplish was to introduce people to the sport generally and explain some things that may not be obvious to people who are just coming through the sport, either, you know, because of Lewis Hamilton, a lot of people came to the sport because of the next Netflix Drive to Survive show, et cetera, to explain how Formula One works, then to situate Lewis in the history of the sport, both from what we just finished talking about the how unique he is and also how unique he is as a driver over the 75 years of the sport, being someone who's tied with 7 world championships with Michael Schumacher and the argument for the greatest of all time, et cetera. And I think that the other things that were important is this question of parenting is a story here to talk about what parents do and sacrifice to kind of get their kids, particularly athletes, in position to succeed. So we're thinking about parents like Serena and Venus Williams' dad. You're thinking about Tiger Woods' father, you know, et cetera. Even Simone Biles' grandparents, who were basically her adopted parents, who went through everything that had to be done to get her into gymnastics. And I think the overarching concern in the book is just Lewis's efforts in social justice, whether that be police violence, diversifying the sport from a perspective of race, ethnicity, and gender, LGBTQ issues, the environment, you know, all kinds of food practices. He's concerned with all these things at the same time.
I want to dive deeper into Lewis's kind of activism and how he used the sport as a platform to kind of basically really push change in a sport that he feels like should change. I know some athletes have followed his lead, but there's also some critics that push back on keeping sports and politics separate. What are your views on that in terms of how Lewis has handled that situation?
Yeah, for some context, you know, I grew up in Chicago in the 70s, so Ali was kind of a presence both real and imagined for us. And so as a kid, I always understood that athletes who were heroes were basically ones who took a stand on something. So I was never a person who thought those things were separate. And I think what really happens is even when people are saying that athletes shouldn't talk about political things, they're actually making a political statement by saying that, right? They're basically saying that they want to separate what are obviously kind of political events, right? It doesn't take much to understand, like, when we have important football or baseball games, to kind of fly over from the military is a political statement, right? The kind of statement at the beginning with the national anthem, et cetera. These are all political things that are meant to, you know, to pull our society together. And so what Lewis kind of realizes in the same way that I think Ali and other athletes who've been activists happen to understand is that this is a platform, while people are paying attention, not let the fact of the sport or the fact of the competition or other things distract you from other super important things that are going on in society, where sports for Lewis is not an escape from these things. It's to your point, a platform to throw light on them while at the same time competing at the highest level. So at no point does he disrupt the actual event, right? So those who claim that it's disruptive can't really be talking about whether the race happened or not. They're just talking about the things that happen outside the actual event, which is when he makes a statement about Breonna Taylor being killed by the police, or he's concerned about the other things I was talking about, like why there aren't more women journalists in the sport, et cetera. Those things are important to him.
Right. I want to end on this final question very quickly. Give me your one answer. If Lewis Hamilton, how would you describe his career? One word.
Remarkable.
There we go. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, coming up next, we sit down with Gerald Early, an author, next on Behind the Sport. Stay tuned.
One out of two Americans thinks their life is worthy of a book. Here's another startling stat. You may be one of the 15% of people who bothered to start your book, and one of the 6% that got halfway through it, but your gem of an idea likely died. Or did it? Some published authors are making significant money, so join the ranks of the successful people that finish their books with help from Dorrance Publishing. Call right now, and our experienced editors and writers will explain to you what it's going to take to get your book completely written, published, and then taken to market to sell it. It's a free consultation, so call right now. Find out how much time and money it takes to finally get that book idea of yours published. Make your dreams happen. Call Dorrance Publishing right now.
800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. 800-485-6003. That's 800-485-6003.
Has someone in your family lost a job recently, and now you can't afford your mortgage payment? Or do you have a rental property and your tenants aren't paying you? Quick Cash Offer can come to the rescue and pay you cash for your home immediately. Yes, sell your home and get cash all over the phone without dealing with real estate agents and risking your safety by showing your home to lukewarm buyers. You don't need to lose your home to foreclosure. If you have any equity in your home, we will buy it and give you cash within days, all in a simple over-the-phone and virtual process. Call Quick Cash Offer now, before the economy gets worse. Sell a home you can't afford or just don't want to get the cash you need today.
800-788-1495. 800-788-1495. 800-788-1495. That's 800-788-1495.
Life insurance is one of those things that just about everybody needs, but few people actually have. Hey, if you die unexpectedly without life insurance, guess what? You'll leave your family with even a bigger mess. Life insurance will help replace your family's income. It'll help cover burial expenses. Life insurance can even help pay off debt like credit cards and medical bills. Life insurance can even pay for college. And if you own a business and you die, life insurance can help your business from collapsing. It can even help cover estate taxes. Life insurance has never been more affordable and needed. Plus, you can always shop around even if you have a plan and save some money. So call the Life Insurance Quote Line right now for free pricing information.
800-915-9654, 800-915-9654, 800-915-9654. That's 800-915-9654.
Welcome back to BTS on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, presented by Innovative Wellness Center. I want to welcome in Gerald Early, a cultural historian, professor, and the author of the no powerful book, Play Harder, The Triumph of Black Baseball in America. Gerald, welcome into the show. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Let's start from the very beginning. Your book isn't just about Jackie Robinson, who most people would attribute, you know, the great rise of Black people in baseball and in the sport of baseball. But there's others in the broader kind of realm of things that are often forgot about in the story. Why do you feel it's important to tell this story right now?
Well, I think... For one thing, most people don't know the full story of Black people in baseball in the United States, and I think it's important for people to know that Black people have been playing this game and have loved this game for a very long time, since back in the 19th century. I think right about now, in the political climate we have right now, I think it would do a lot of people good to know this and to know about Black people's struggle to play the game and their insistence that they wanted to earn their way in playing the game and wanted to be a part of Major League Baseball and did not expect anyone to give them anything or make any kind of special concessions for them to play the game.
Obviously, this is a bigger issue than these athletes who were just wanting to play the sport of baseball. Why do you think that American people don't know or have forgotten about the unsung heroes back in the day?
Well, I think number one, a lot of Americans don't know history very well of you know, whether it's baseball history or sports history or anything else. I think a lot of people just don't know history very well. I also think that Jackie Robinson is this major figure, and in some ways he kind of is a kind of blinder or sort of deflects people from knowing about things that happened before him or things that happened after his time in baseball. So I think people kind of feel that when Jackie Robinson came, oh, well, everything was solved. And, you know, the whole business about race in baseball was solved, which it was not. And then, you know, before Jackie Robinson, a lot of people, it's amazing that a lot of people don't even know that Black people played baseball, organized leagues, organized teams, had sports writers, and everything else before Jackie Robinson came on the scene. And as a matter of fact, if it wasn't for Negro leagues and Black sports writers and things like that, Jackie Robinson would not have been possible.
Yeah, and it's interesting in educating myself. To your point of the organization, there were multiple different leagues, not only the Negro leagues, but also international, you know, the Cuban leagues and some in Mexico that were also kind of integrating at the time. But still, the major leagues were not kind of getting on the game plan with integration. And when you look at it today, there are so few physical places where people can go and see where Negro League players played. What do you, or why do you think this part of history has been so underpreserved? I mean, we can have historic baseball stadiums like Fenway and all that kind of stuff, but we don't get to go feel and play on these stadiums where these Negro leagues played.
Well, I think that one of the reasons why we don't have as much preservation of these things as we would like is because when integration happened and Jackie Robinson came in, one of the major Negro leagues just immediately died. And the Negro leagues really, there was another Negro league that kept going for several more years, but it never got any kind of attention or anything like this. I think it was because, whites were not interested in preserving it, And two, I think there were a lot of the black leadership that thought that, oh, once Jackie Robinson got in the game, that's the end of the Negro Leagues and we don't really need to know about it anymore. And so there wasn't as active an effort to preserve the history of the Negro Leagues among many black people for a time after Jackie Robinson got in the game. And that's unfortunate that people thought that was the case, with a combination of white neglect and black people feeling that, oh, the Negro Leagues had served their purpose and we're just going to move on from that. And I think it wasn't until the 1970s and so forth where there was renewed interest in the Negro Leagues, because people began to talk to the old players who had played in the Negro Leagues and began to bring to light the importance of the Negro Leagues and what the Negro Leagues did. As I said before, if it wasn't for the Negro Leagues, Jackie Robinson would not have been able to play Major League Baseball, because he played with the Kansas City Monarchs, and that's how he got on the radar of the Brooklyn Dodgers to even be able to play Major League Baseball.
Right, and Jackie was a multi-sport athlete, and a lot of the players in the Negro Leagues helped him kind of really hone his craft when it comes to baseball, because he was really great at basketball and football, but when it came to baseball, he wasn't as strong, and a lot of those players really helped him craft his skill and become the player that he did and as a result. But I want to imagine an alternate history for a second, where black players, if they had been allowed to play in the major leagues from the start, how do you think the game of baseball, this America's favorite pastime, how do you think that would have been different?
That's an interesting question. I think black players would have become, I think several black players would have become stars in the game. So I think that they would have been, I think they would have changed the game in the style in which they played, because a lot of them played a speed game. They played a kind of different sort of aggressive kind of game. And I think the style of it would have affected Major League Baseball. It's hard to say exactly when you have, if you had Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige and all those leading, Oscar Charleston, Buck Leonard, and all those leading guys who were playing in the major leagues, if you had those guys playing in the major leagues, what new records might have been set, or what records that have been set in the white major leagues might not have been set. Maybe Joe DiMaggio doesn't hit in 56 straight games, because it would have been black pitchers pitching in the major leagues, and maybe they would have stopped his streak before he got to 56. It's hard to say exactly what would have happened. I think I think more black people would have been attracted to the major leagues, watching the games. I think there would have been a greater number of black fans supporting it and going out to the games. I think that would have changed the composition of the fans in the stands and so forth. Of course, it would have been covered in black newspapers more, the major leagues, because black players would have been playing. So I think that those changes would have been significant insofar as the major leagues penetrating black culture, black people's lives and their communities, because of black people playing in the game. So I think that would have been very significant. It just would have changed, I think, the whole feeling of the game, because of the black fans being attracted to it, because the black players would have been playing in the game.
You mentioned players like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson. Speak to their careers, speak to their legacies a little bit in terms of how they changed the game from the outside.
Well, Satchel Paige was certainly probably the most famous player connected with the Negro Leagues. And he was not only a brilliant pitcher, but he was a real showman. And the amazing thing about Satchel Paige was that for a very long time, Satchel Paige was basically a kind of one-pitch pitcher. I mean, he just basically threw fastballs. And it took him actually several years to learn how to throw an effective curveball. It seems impossible to think that someone could get by playing in a league of professional players and you're basically like a one-pitch pitcher. But he did, because he was such a good pitcher. But he was also a showman. He knew how to appeal to the crowd, doing things like having his players come in while he struck out the side and stuff like that, that really thrilled the crowds and stuff. So he understood how people wanted not just competition with sports, with professional sports, but they also wanted a kind of show, and he knew how to do that. Josh Gibson was probably the most powerful hitter in Negro League baseball, and maybe the most powerful hitter in professional baseball, whether it was black or white. I think he was the most feared hitter in the Negro Leagues, probably along with Oscar Charleston, probably even more feared than Oscar Charleston or Buck Leonard. And he was a really legendary figure in the sport. I think he was frustrated because he wanted – both men were frustrated in their own ways. Satchel Paige wanted to be the person who was going to integrate Major League Baseball. He was disappointed when Jackie Robinson was chosen first. He was desperate because by the time baseball integrated, he was over 40, and so he knew his clock was running out. So he was really desperate to make it into the major leagues, and as much to his credit, and Bill Veeck, who signed him, that he got a chance to play with the Cleveland Indians in 1948. Josh Gibson never did, and I think that that was really, he died prematurely, and I think that part of the reason he died prematurely was that he was extremely heartbroken that he never got
right
in the major leagues. I think that was something that he felt he wanted to do, and I think he felt he deserved that.
He felt
that his achievements, what he was as an athlete, he deserved to play. And I think
hold that thought right there. We're going to go to commercial break real quick. After we come back, we're going to get into some of your book with Gerald. Stay tuned.
Are you truly committed to feeling better? I mean, absolutely feeling your best. What's the key? Eat well, sleep well, lots of hydration through water, and also your daily innovative wellness athletic supplement packs. These packets are created to supplement your daily lifestyle, allowing your body to have the nutrients it needs to run efficiently. These packets include multi-omega fish oil, D3K2 5000, probiotic, and magnesium. It's nearly impossible to get all the nutrients our body requires to run efficiently on a regular basis from our food alone. Taking this daily packet will leave you feeling more energetic and more vibrant. Your brain body will be able to detoxify more efficiently, which naturally reduces inflammation. Find out today. InnovativeWellness.center. InnovativeWellness.center. And use the code SPORTS Overnight America.
Everyone watches more than 5 hours of television. Really? And that's not counting mobile viewing. Get Dish TV and make that time worth it. With Dish, you can get hundreds of channels, access to all kinds of sports, tons of movies, premium channels, and more. Another thing that's really cool with Dish is you can watch most of your favorite shows on your mobile device anywhere for a lot less than cable. Yes, that's right. We are asking you to watch more TV and not less TV, but make it better television with Dish this time, anytime, anywhere. So call right now and learn how easy it is to save on your television bill and get the most out of your TV viewing experience. Dial that number and I promise you we're here waiting for your call because we want to save you money and give you better television. We are Dish TV.
800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. That's 800-293-0328.
Getting together with friends to watch the game? Then you'll need American Premium Vodka. Handcrafted and pure, this is the one thing all Americans can agree on. Founder Mark Gus Scott chose the finest natural elements America has to offer, and you'll taste how great it is to be an American. Now available at BevMo, GoPuff, Hy-Vee, and Fairway stores. American Premium Vodka. This is the America we need right now. Go to AmericanPremiumVodka.com. Celebrate responsibly.
Soccer season rolls on here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. This is Tyler Levine, host of First Touch, the premier weekly global soccer show across the entire Sports Byline Broadcast, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Simple Radio, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. We're talking English Premier League, Champions League, our picks of the week, and a whole lot more. First Touch on Sports Byline USA Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern. See you there.
Welcome back to BTS on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, presented by Innovative Wellness Center. Sitting down with Gerald Early, author, talking about his new book and the history of the Negro Leagues in the sport of baseball. Gerald, welcome back. I want to dive into a little bit of the future of baseball, specifically how young Black Americans view the sport currently. What do you feel like, and what are you seeing?
Well, as a lot of people may know, Black participation, Black American participation in the sport reached its height in the 70s. And into the early 80s, and as nearly 20% of Major League Baseball players were Black Americans. Now it's down to about 6.5%, and part of that is due to young Black athletes going into basketball and football as they offer professional opportunities, but also because those sports are more popular with Black Americans in baseball. And that might seem odd, counterintuitive to many people, because after all, Black people had leagues and so forth, and one would think that baseball would still be very popular, but it isn't as popular as it once was. And I think Major League Baseball is making some efforts to try to generate Black kids being interested in the game. There are problems with just the expense of if you want your kid to play Little League, or you want your kid to be part of one of these traveling teams and so forth. It's expensive, and so a lot of Black families are priced out of it. Baseball, college scholarships in baseball. Not many Black players get those, and so there is an issue about Black Americans playing the game. And so, but it's all related to, I think, the fact that Black people on the whole are not as into the game as they used to be, maybe 50 years ago or something like that. Black people, Black Americans tend to, as I said, gravitate to basketball and to football. And that's part of that is because it's part of the school culture that Black people have. High school sports at Black schools are very much geared for basketball and football. And so it being part of the school culture, it's become really embedded in Black culture. It's become embedded in hip-hop culture and so forth. It's become embedded in the culture of young people. And baseball has not done that. Baseball is not embedded in the culture in the same way. It's not embedded in the culture of young Black people in the way that football and basketball are.
There's a little bit of a sense of loss when we talk about the Negro Leagues. So many names, so many careers are erased from the mainstream memory, and yet your book is titled The Triumph. Why was it important for you to focus on lightening the mood a little bit and using, you know, the verbiage of the triumph and not focusing on everything that came with essentially what was a tragedy?
Well, one is because I wanted the book to give a positive message to readers. Two, because I believe that Black people creating the Negro Leagues and their effort at playing baseball, how Black people, in fact, were part of a transnational, as you mentioned before, with Black people playing in Mexico, Black people playing in Cuba back during the Negro League days and so forth, and that players, dark-skinned players from those places played in the Negro Leagues as well, that Black people doing this is a major achievement. My feeling is that Black people playing baseball in America made America a better place. And I feel that's a triumph for this country and for black people. And so that's why I called it that. And also the act of integration, what Jackie Robinson did and the early players and so forth. We have problems now, I don't deny it, with what's happened with integration and black people not being as interested in the sport and so forth. But on the whole, the history of black people playing this game in the United States is a history that people should be proud of, and it's a history that I'm proud of. What has happened insofar as roadblocks or things like that, or things have not turned out as well, or black people is not connected to the game as maybe they should be, is not the fault of black people. So that's why I refuse to call the book some kind of tragedy or something like that. I refuse to read black people's history as some kind of tragedy. I think that's a very negative way of putting it. I feel that black people have achieved against enormous odds in this country and have made this country. A lot of the good that this country has produced has come from black people.
Right, you can say a lot for the people in the back. But are there any other specific players outside of ones we mentioned earlier, Page and Gibson, that you've come to admire deeply, who've left a lasting legacy but don't get the recognition they deserve?
Are you speaking of Negro League players or just black American players in general who play Major League Baseball? Or are you talking about specifically Negro League players?
Specifically Negro League players.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know...
I know there's a lot.
There's Willie Wells, who was called El Diablo, who played in Mexico and decided to stay there. He married a Mexican woman, and he said he had had it with American racism and decided to stay there. He was a great player. I admire the fact that he decided that he was going to thumb his nose at the United States and the racism here and decided to stay in Mexico to play there. So I think he is a great player who needs to be remembered. There is Quincy Troop, catcher, who was another great player and did a lot to shape the game, shape the Negro Leagues. Biz Mackey is another great catcher who was responsible for, among other things, Biz Mackey was responsible for training Roy Campanella into the player that he became. So I think Biz Mackey is somebody who deserves a lot of credit. Turkey Stearns is another player who I have a lot of admiration for. Great player, would have been a great player in the major leagues. Oscar Charleston, who I mentioned before. I think Oscar Charleston was I would rate him among the top five greatest professional baseball players ever. I mean, the man played with enormous intensity was a feared competitor. Buck Leonard is another great ball player who deserves credit for his achievements. You know, there was a woman who played in the 1950s with men in the Negro Leagues. One of them, Toni Stone, she deserves a lot of credit because she was playing on a men's team in the Negro Leagues in the early 1950s. She had to put up with a lot of sexism and misogyny in doing so, but she persevered because her dream was always to play baseball. And her dream was always to play baseball with men. She wanted to play with the very best. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she's a hero. And she did pretty well playing. Unfortunately, she got kind of hooted out of the league after playing for a couple years. But she's a person whose story should be known. And she was a great athlete. And she's somebody I really admire. So those are some of the people I can think of just off the top of my head as people I really admire who was connected with the Negro Leagues. I mean, I also admire Effa Manley, who owned the Newark Eagles and was one of the more outspoken owners in the Negro Leagues. And she's the only woman, incidentally, she's the only woman who is in the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, is Effa Manley. A lot of people don't know that, but that's something that I think is important.
In 2020, just 5 years ago, the MLB officially recognized the Negro Leagues as part of Major League history. What does that moment mean to you? And, I mean, the Negro Leagues were spanning, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s. And, you know, in 2020, just 5 years ago from now, they're officially recognized. What does this mean to you?
Well, I think it was long overdue. But finally, the Negro Leagues got the legitimacy that they deserve. They produced high-quality ball players who were every bit as good as the Major League Baseball players, sometimes even better. That they had always been cast as, second tier because they didn't have the complete stats and stuff like that. And so finally, with this happening, these players are now being put where they should be, which is right up there with the white players. We had an era of basically apartheid baseball in the United States for many years, and it's good that the Hall recognized that, and the Hall has finally decided that, you know, we're going to go by having one set of baseball. We have one game. And it's the tragedy of this country that racism prevented those men from actually being able to play together on the same teams as they should have been. But now to recognize their greatness as equal to the white players is long overdue, and I think it's a great thing for the Negro League, great thing for black baseball, and a great thing for this country that these men have finally been recognized for what they've achieved.
Well, it's now that time to wrap up our show and end on some sports-themed would-you-rather questions. Gerald, you're going to have 5 seconds to choose your answer from would-you-rather. No thinking, just pure instinct. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, first one. Would you rather watch Satchel Paige pitch in his prime or Josh Gibson hit a home run at a packed Negro League stadium?
Satchel Paige in his prime.
Would you rather integrate a Major League team in 1947 or manage a Negro League All-Star team touring the country?
Manage a Negro League All-Star team touring the country.
Would you rather see a full-length documentary on every forgotten Negro League player or see their stories adapted into a fictional TV drama?
See a documentary.
Would you rather have baseball become the most popular sport among black youth again or see more black leadership in MLB front offices and ownership?
See more black leadership in MLB front offices.
All right. Well, thanks for playing. Last but not least, I want to give you the floor and quickly give us your insider secret. This could be a behind-the-scenes moment, a funny story, or something you wish the fans knew about the sport that you love.
I think that the best story I can come up with is Ozzie Smith, the great shortstop of the St. Louis Cardinals, who's in the Hall of Fame. I got my school, Washington University, to give him an honorary degree, and I got a chance to be with him for a couple of days while he had to tour the campus and get this honorary degree. And I think that that's I'm really proud of that story, proud that I was able to be with him when he got this honorary degree, and proud of my school that they gave him an honorary degree.
Yeah, that is definitely something that is definitely something worth mentioning. Well, thank you so much, Gerald, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate that.
Make sure you go read his new book, Play Harder, The Triumph of Black Baseball in America. Coming up next, we wrap up the show. This is BTS. Stay tuned.
Listen up, guys. Are you experiencing any of the following? Fatigue, less drive, poor performance? If so, you may be one of the nearly 30 million men in the U.S. today dealing with ED. But did you know you don't have to pay hundreds for a prescription anymore? And you don't have to deal with the hassle of seeing the doctor or the embarrassment of going to the pharmacy for a certain pill. Now, with one free call, you can find out how Herbal Virility Max can help you feel like a man again. For over a decade, Herbal Virility Max has helped guys just like you put a smile back on their face with improved performance and drive. Call today and ask about our buy one, get one free offer.
800-773-5112. 800-773-5112. 800-773-5112. That's 800-773-5112.
This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. That's 800-361-3491.
Are you tired of making trip after trip on doctor visits only to get wrong medications that waste time, money, and cause you side effects? If you're on Medicare, call for a free medical assessment and determine which medications are right for you based on your genetic makeup with our convenient swab test performed in your home and mailed to our laboratory. No more trial and error. The results will tell you and your doctor which medications you don't need and identify more appropriate replacements. If you're on Medicare and take multiple medications, call now for our genetic testing service at little or no cost to you. It starts with a call for a free medical assessment and evaluation of your Medicare coverage. Make this free call right now.
800-948-6814. 800-948-6814. 800-948-6814. That's 800-948-6814.
The NFL draft of 2025 concluded officially. Shocking moments for me. Obviously, Browns trading their number two pick to the Panthers, resulting in Travis Hunter going to the Panthers. That was an interesting move because in hindsight, the Browns could have had Shadur and Travis Hunter, but they didn't care about that anymore. Speaking of Shadur, him falling all the way down, that was very interesting, but I think it was more of the NFL making an example out of him, not because of who he is. I think his last name says a lot, right? But this was the NFL making an example of how college is changing the culture of athletes. These athletes craving money, being a little bit money hungry, and the business of college sports at its core and how that's evolving. That is really what I believe as to why Shadur fell so far. But there was a lot of big winners in this draft. Cowboys didn't do terribly bad. Of course, we got another O-lineman named Tyler, but all in all, it was a good draft for the Cowboys, so I have to give homage to my home team. But all right, that's going to do it for us today on BTS What a Ride. Thanks again to our guests for pulling back the curtain and sharing the stories you definitely will not find in a box score. Be sure to tune in next week for yet another exciting episode with more incredible guests and insights. We'll be right back here next Wednesday, same time, same place. You can follow our show on Instagram at Behind the Sports. Sports Show. Also on YouTube and all major streaming platforms, you can listen. Big thanks to Michael and Gerald for joining us. I'm Giovanna Scroggins, and this has been Behind the Sport, BTS on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, presented by Innovative Wellness Center. Keep supporting, keep celebrating, and keep being curious about what happens behind the sport.